Thank you, Rav Yitzchak. We might get to one of these today, so if not, and don't say I never gave you any. Okay. Poetry and prayer. What do they have to do with each other, first of all? Well, they both begin, they have an alliteration. You can use an old picture of me. I could be talking, I'm actually talking about nuclear physics today. Okay. So, they have the alliteration, right? From an alliterative standpoint, you know what alliteration is, right? So what's the alliteration I'm referring to? I'm on a tangent already.
Prayer
and poetry. But they also have, in the sound of it, they have a certain kind of poetic quality in the fact that there is an alliteration. What's the nature of the alliteration? What kind of sound is it? Make the sound, okay? Puh. Yeah, you do it very, very... Puh. That's called a... Another alliteration. That sound is a plosive, right? And there are alliterations. Do you guys know this? You wrote it down, you passed the test somewhere, and then you promptly forgot it. There are alliterations because that's a way of using sound, in the same way it's a way of using sound when we read poetry, because you shouldn't read poetry, you should sing poetry. Right? Wait a second. What's the name of the Sefer? What name does the Torah give itself? Somebody tell me what? What name does the Torah give itself? Okay, I'll ask a more directed question. Okay? What's the last mitzvah in the Sefer Torah? To write a Sefer Torah. Does it say to write a Sefer Torah? Es HaShira HaZot. Right? Atakitvu Lachem Et HaShira HaZot. The Torah calls itself Shira. So the question is, what is Shira? So look in your handy dandy Siddurim, and the law translates Shira as what? Shira. No, if I say Shira.
Oh.
Song. Wrong. Okay, there's a rhyme also, right? Shira means poetry. It's just that poetry, properly read, is always sung. And I'll try and explain why soon, somewhere, on some point in the tangent. But it means that the Torah calls itself a poem. Now, we can barely, I'm saying we, Rabbi Yitz talked about whether we know the meaning of the words of Tzilah, do we know the meaning of the words of Torah, right? But even if you know the words, and we'll come to the issue of translation soon, the Torah, when you really, really, really know Hebrew, you see how much of a poem it is. I just give you an example. I'm sorry, I'm starting. This is all tangential, okay? I was thinking while Yitz was talking, because I've heard the joke before, okay, about taking your shirt off. You know. So, what's the first poetic thing in the Torah? Start with the beginning. Right. Okay, so what's the poetry?
Alliteration.
It's alliteration, right? Now, you all know the question about why the Torah begins with Beit, right? Why shouldn't it begin with Beit? It's in the Midrash already. It should begin with
Aleph.
That's the beginning of everything, right? So, you know, the answer, well, the Aleph begins the Aseret HaDibrot, right? But there's another reason, okay? At least I see it poetically. That the creation of the world, there's nothing, right? Which we can't even imagine. There's nothing at all. And then suddenly there's something that comes into existence, right? What's the sound of the Aleph? Would somebody make the sound of the Aleph? Wrong. It has no sound. The Aleph has no sound. It's the sound of silence. What's But the bait is a plosive, right? Bereshit bara, right? And bereshit is a play, bara, right? See it? See it now? You see it in right? Okay? See it in your mind. It's a plosive. So when you study physics, you know, and they begin to explain to you the Big Bang theory of creation, so you say, oh, I know that. That's the big bait theory of creation. The plosive. By the way, what is it that Am Yisrael heard at Har Sinai when the Aseret HaDibrot? What are they hear? Am Yisrael, the whole people. You've got to know this.
Lightning.
What?
Lightning and thunder.
No, yeah, lightning and thunder. But of the Aseret HaDibrot, what did they hear? According to the Gemara, they heard
the first two.
Right? Torah, Tziva, Lan, and Moshe. The Gemara says in Makos and in Tanis, right? Dorosh of Sinloi, Torah, Tziva, Lan, and Moshe. Torah and Gematria is how much? This had an 11, Anochi and Lo Yeluch, the first two commandments. We heard. You didn't hear it from Moshe, we heard, right? But the Menachem Mendel of Rimanov, one of the great Hasidic Rebbes who was involved in introducing Hasidism into Poland in the beginning of the 19th century, said actually all they heard was the Aleph of Anochi. What did they then hear?
Nothing.
The sound of silence, right? And Rabbi Grummet mentioned this morning, he asked you, what was the date that Eliyahu brought the child back to life? Right? But you know there was a second person that God passed over in Sinai. Not just Moshe, who stood on the mountain. Eliyahu, you know that? You know the story of Eliyahu, and he runs away, and he comes to Har Chovev, to Sinai, and he doesn't want to have anything more to do with the Jewish people. So, God keeps asking him, why are you here? And then there's an earthquake. And there is what else? You don't?
Thunder.
Fire. Okay? And a great wind. I can't make the crackling of fire right here. Right? And God was not in the earthquake. He wasn't in the sound of the crackling of the fire. But then what passed over Eliyahu? What happened? Kol Dumama Daka. Could you translate that for me?
Quiet.
Okay. Still, King James is much more eloquent than you are, but not, it's very good. Kol Dumama Daka. There was a still beautiful. We'll talk about we'll mention the King James later. Beautiful, beautiful translation. Okay? From a literary standpoint. But it's wrong. What does the mama mean in Hebrew? Amodom! What does that mean? Vayidom Aaron. What are you guys, dome? Sorry. Just a cross language pun. No insult. I just came to me. I couldn't control myself. Okay? Dome. Okay, guys, you're in the army, and they say, I'm old, dome. What do? You stand straight and still, absolutely still. You don't, it's not like when the rabbi's talking, you whisper something to the next person. Right? Keep quiet. Right? Absolute silence. So Eliyahu heard the kol d'mama daka. Right? Now, what is that? Now, that's the sound of silence, gentlemen. Have you ever, you went to school and you read some poetry. Did you have to read the poems out loud in class? You. Did the teacher read it or did you read it? And what did it mean to read a poem? Well, reading, I had a student many years ago. He gave a Dvar Torah on Shabbos. And I went over to him afterwards. I said, that's very good. You know, you have a midrashic spirit. A midrashic spirit. You guys know what a midrashic spirit is? Probably not. right? So he said, Rabbi, that it's a compliment, I'm sure, but what's the Midrashic spirit? I don't know anything about Midrash. Why? Because he went to Yeshiva High School, so they never taught him that, right? You know? So I said, you know what? We'll take 45 minutes a week, and we're going to learn Midrash. We learn the Midrash called Yalkut Shimoni on the Akedah. You all know what the Akedah is, right? So at a certain point, I said, you know what the Midrash is doing here? The Midrash is explicating the tremendous silence in the story. You know, the tremendous silence. They went for 3 days. On a journey, father and son. The father knew what he was going to do. And the son knew nothing, had suspicions. What did they talk about? Nothing. Nothing. You're not told anything. And the Midrash is trying to fill in the silence. You know, I'm saying this to this young man, your age. And he doesn't seem to get it. And I said, you know, like when you're in high school and you have to read a poem, you know, in front of the class out loud, and to read it properly, you have to read the silences. It's not just blah, 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 blah. It's not just reading words. You have to know how long the pause should be. Right? Now, any guys, musicians, you know about the silence in music? Any guys, physicists, you know about the silence in music? Okay, well, you should, yes. You know?
I remember somebody one time quizzed me on the definition of music. And I remember what he said to me after I gave a bunch of guesses was, it's not just an organization of sounds, it's a rhythmic organization of sounds and silences.
Of course. And it's a physicist plus. Wearies you, you're going to get the same answer in physics language. So anyway, he looked at me like I was crazy, which actually might be a good diagnosis. Doesn't make any difference. I made it pretty long in life, you know. And he said, Rabbi, I went to MTA, the name of a school. You guys know where it is, I know. It's the other one. I went to MTA, and we never read poetry out loud. I said, what do you mean? You just took tests, right? He said, we just took tests, right? So I told him, I gave him a poem. I said, you have to read this out loud to me next week. And he read it out loud, and then I played him a recording of Dylan Thomas reading it. So he began to get the idea. Eventually began to write poetry. Anyway. So, one thing, the Torah is a poem. Okay. Kitfu lochem et hashira hazot. Write the poem. Sima b'fihem, even though it's written, I'm quoting the pasuk, put it in their mouth. Why? Because when you, I'm going to ask a question, how many poems do you read? Have you read a poem in the recent past in your life? Right? That's the answer I expected. So let's say you had read a poem, okay? You had read a poem. So you have a poem in front of you. Here's a poem. But that's not reading a poem. You can't read a poem just by reading a poem. Poetry is always recited. It's always aloud. It's always out loud. And the nature, now let me ask a question. Why do we write poetry? Okay? What's the, you know, there's prose and there's poetry. What do we need poetry for? What do you need music for? Okay, you guys all, music. Last night I walked into a matzolet, right? And the makolet was empty, but the guy at the counter had like I was in a Springsteen concert. It was that loud. He's a nice guy. I know him. You know, I said, oh, Ruth. So he said, Ken Kenavel, whom is Daken? I said, what? You know, he's getting old. Right? I said, Uven Shishim Shmona, my bad. He said, well, I said, what are you talking about? I'm older. So, you know, he's 68. I said, right? So, like, well, why? What's the point of music? You ever listen to people daven like this morning, where you're davening in like a Kabbalah Shabbos, you know, Kalbach place, and everybody's, the words, blah, blah, da, 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 singing along sort of, and as soon as they stop, the words, everybody starts really singing, right? Just the la la la, just making music. Look, language is a problem. It's a problem because there's, like, it's hard to say in words. There are all kinds of things that are hard to say in words. There's a well-known observation by a certain Polish linguist whose name I can't pronounce, that the map is not reality. Language is a map of the world. Is this red? Is this blue? Is it red? Is this a death? Those are just words. Okay, so let's do it a little different. This is yellow, and this is green. Is that all right? You guys think I've lost my mind? Did any guys read Alice in Wonderland? You know what Humpty Dumpty says? I don't know what Humpty Dumpty says. Yeah, you know he sits on a wall and a great fall, blah, blah, blah. Humpty Dumpty, the problem of Humpty Dumpty is, he says to Alice, he says the word up. So up. No! Humpty Dumpty, when he says up, it's this way. And Alice says, you can't do that. He says, yes, I can. I can, whatever I say is what it means. She says, no, you can't. He says, Alice, I'm not quoting exactly, he says, little girl, the question is, who shall be master? The words are in charge of me, or I'm in charge of the words. So that's not red. And that's not blue, that's green. Just why? Because I say it so. Who shall be master? Right? So words are just a way of trying to indicate something, but it's beyond the word itself. So when you can't really in shir, you know, I used to give shir. So I asked the guy, what's the pshat in this tosos? So guys would always say, not, you know, there'd be always one guy who said it the first time, and then, you know, a guy would try it a second time a few days later, and after that they grew frightened and wouldn't say things like that. They'd say, oh Rabbi, I know pshat, I just can't put it into words. So I would say to them, why don't you hum it to me? Right? Things that you can't put into words, you put into music. In between words and music, you have poetry. And that's why poetry, still falling short, itself is sung. Okay? Now, this sounds like very important. So when I retired for a few years before I was involved in starting this yeshiva, okay? And I decided, you know, when I went to America, I decided I'd get on the lecture circuit. There's a Jewish lecture circuit, right? So a student of mine was on the lecture circuit. It was run by the JWB, Jewish Welfare Board, okay? All around America. So he gave me the name of the person in charge. And when I was in America the next time, I called up and I said, so-and-so told me to call you. He suggested that I might be able to, you know, get on your lecture bureau, run around America. So the woman said, this is without exaggeration, the woman said, what is it you do? I said, well, I write poetry, and at which point over the phone, I hear this, death, death, death. Excuse me. I thought I was going to have to, you know, like, get 9/11 to this woman as she's dying. I said, what? She said, death! Poetry! Death! I said, what are you talking about? She said, There's no, nobody wants poetry. Nobody will show up. Forget it. We don't have anything for you. I said, no, no, let me explain what I do. She said, I'm not interested. You said poetry. Yes! Yeah, that was the end of this conversation. So none of you guys read poems, so why would you come to a poetry reading, right? You know, so like, okay, now, okay? How many poems, right? So you have a problem, poetry, and prayer. Rav Yitz correctly pointed out, but this is a problem that's been going on for, at least in my knowledge, for at least 30 years. And in schools, yeshiva day schools, all kinds of schools, they it's just impossible. You know, like when I would go to interview kids for yeshiva, so I made a point of davening in the first school that I was in interviewing. I would try and daven with their minyan in the school. Okay, I'm going to tell you, you know, if I had to work in those schools, you know, and be at the minyan. And what the teachers are doing, what the rabbis are doing, is wandering around and they're saying, you know, put your cell phone away, stop talking to somebody, you know, stop doing this, stop this, that. It's policemen. That's also a plosive. Prayer, poetry, and police. Right? So it's awful. The whole thing is just sad. Now, put the two together, and now I'm going to tell you guys, you actually, and it's telling, you know, that nobody said that, what do you mean, Rabbi, about reading poetry? I will read at least 10 poems today. Does anybody know what I'm talking about? What? Uvishire David Avdecha. You're familiar with that phrase? We will praise Baruch Shamar Vahayaha Olam Baruch Hu. Baruch, right? Notice the bait. The plosive without creation, but we say Uvishire David Avdecha with the poems of David your servant. So you guys are all saying poems, singing poems out loud. You know, it's out loud. It sounds like a morgue. Most shuls that I've been in, it sounds like a morgue. Nobody's saying anything. I'm not sure what they're thinking about. But they're certainly not reading poetry the way I understand reading poetry to be. Shire David Avdecha. So why are we saying Shire David Avdecha? The answer is, we are saying that the greatest poet in the Jewish tradition that we have are, essentially, Tehillim. Oh, Yedei David Mashiach, Tikecha, right? Over and over again. So you are trying, if you could write your own poems, then maybe you would say your own poems. But we say, we're reading, you know, like, you know, you'll meet Henna Sprinzer. You want to impress her. Okay? What impresses Henna Sprinzer? Aside from being a very decent tzaddik. What? No, good bandwidth, right? Yeah, okay. Okay, you're not going to be getting me off the top, right? So what impresses her is a poem. Right? And You don't know how to write poetry yourself. You haven't tried it. So instead, you read her a sonnet of Shakespeare. So what does she say? Does she say, oh, you didn't write that? Is that what she's going to say? What do you think? I'm looking at you. You had bandwidth, so now you're going to get it, right? She's going to be impressed. She's going to say, here's a guy with genuine feelings. He knows that Shakespeare is really saying something that's really loving and meaningful. Okay, then he gave it to you. I mean, it hadn't been to speak Yiddish, so you'll read Shakespeare in translation. Okay, but still. No. Right? But there it is. You guys don't know that you're saying poetry. The Jews, you get up every morning. Jews get up every morning and they sing poems. They read poems. They read it out loud. Right? And yet, of course, as we know, we don't know what the heck we're doing. Okay? Poetry. Oh, my God. Death. Prayer. Death. We don't know that we're saying poems. Right? So, well, what is... Let me ask you a big question. Okay? Where does religion begin? I mean, let's say a person doesn't have any religion. Oh, you know what? Let's start with the first Jew, right? We'll start with Avram. Where does it begin? Okay, well, I'll give you a clue. The Midrash asks that question. The Midrash asks that question. The Torah doesn't tell us where Avram comes from, or how he, or why God is talking to him. What does the Midrash say? This is important because, you know, like, even though you're born Jewish, everybody has to find God, right? So where does it begin? You know anything about a traveler? You ever hear that? No. So, okay, the Midrash's answer is, there's a traveler, a person on a journey, and he sees a palace that's lit up, and he begins to ask questions. It's a wonderful thing he's looking at. And he's wondering. Not only the Midrash, the Rambam, in Hilchot Avodah Zarah, in the first Perek, he says, Avram, when he was a child, began to ask questions, use the word, v'hayatameyah. He was wondering. Religion begins in wonder. The reality. If it doesn't incite you to wonder, then you're probably already addicted to your cell phone. Wonderful is not an objective reality. It's what we should be doing in response to reality. To wonder about it. And we begin to wonder. Arguably the greatest philosopher of the 20th century, Ludwig Wittgenstein, said, the mystery of the world is not how it is, but that it is. Now, I'm not trying to give you a proof from Aristotelian philosophy or truth from poetry to the existence of God, but if you don't have wonder, there's something profoundly lacking. And religion begins in wonder. We should be surprised by the fact of the world, by the fact of our existence. And poetry is perfect for that because poetry, you could argue with me, but then you'll have to read a lot of, that's a trick to get you to read a lot of poems. I understand that poetry is about being surprised at the world. It's the wonder of the world. In a number of past years, in fact, I didn't have one in the past year, but for about 7 or 8 years in yeshiva, I had a poetry chug. We read a poem every week, you know. I mean, the sum total of people who were interested were between 1 and 4 every year. That was the average. We read a poem every week, and the guys had to read it properly, and know what the references were, and then the question was always at the end of that, what if you were teaching this in a Jewish school, okay, would there be any way of relating it to the Jewish curriculum? Then the poems were almost never about anything in Jewish literature. They were about coffee cups and people walking through a city or whatever in the world. We, over the course of the years, we went through about 100 poems. It's about wonder and surprise. So they have something in common that is fundamental. Shirei David Avdecha. David HaMelech is surprised and wonders about the magnificence of the world. Okay, what are all those? What's David's response? What does he tell us in the poem when you're talking about the magnificence of the world that we know? What's the word, the operative word? This you've got to know, gentlemen. You don't know this, then perk up. What's one? The one word? Come on, you said Sukkot is Zimra this morning. We're saying it because it's all about wonder and the way we should relate to the world. Right? It's all a preparation to both Baruch Shamar V'Hayah Olam, and then we have to say the Tehillim. The wonder in Tehillim. And what's the word?
Hallelujah.
Right! Hallelujah! Right? It's wonderful! Hallelujah! What is Hallel? Wow! That's a palindrome, because it's never ending. You know, wow is a palindrome. Hallelujah, hallelujah, wow. Right? And that's getting us ready to be able to daven properly. So, what Rav Yitz said, it's really true. We'll get into translations soon. But, you know, hallelujah, hallelujah, right? What's the first halacha in Shulchan Aruch? The first halacha is to get up in the morning like a lion. And it continues, Shiyehehu Ma'orer HaShachar, that you, the person who gets up, you should stir up the morning. It's your presence and your calling forth to the morning. Now we know if you're a physicist, right? And if you, not deductively, but inductively, you can put a good bet that the sun is going to rise even though you're not awake, right? Was anybody up here before sun rose this morning? Okay. I had no doubt that even Donald Trump couldn't stop it. I had no doubt strike that from the record, okay? Forget it, you know, I lost myself, okay? I had no doubt, based inductively, I would put all my wealth on it that the sun wouldn't rise. But the idea that somehow I'm connected to all of this. And that's what we're doing. That's what it's all about. Because that's what it means to be human. What differentiates, okay, I don't want to put anybody on the spot. What differentiates me? You can answer the question, but what differentiates me from just an aardvark? An aardvark, okay guys, it's not about them over there. Right? Aardvark is the first, like it's, you know, in the phone book, you need a plumber, it's an installator. So you look in the phone book, and this guy is an installator, right? But the important thing is that you look at his listing first. So there's Aleph installator, and then there's Aleph installator, and then there's Aleph. So aardvark, as far as I know in the English language, is the first animal. Double A, right? You know? Is there anything that comes before that? Okay. So what differentiates, what is in the Torah? Man is created, right? What differentiates the creation of man? It's a pasuk in the Torah. What? No? What? B'tzelem Elokim, right? But how is man created B'tzelem Elokim? What would it be? You know something about breath? Breath? Vayipach bi'apov nishmat chayim. The breath of life. Right? It's a kind of creative, not artificial, but ultimate reality respiration. Right? But in the end, man becomes, in the Torah, becomes what? A nefesh chaya. What is Nefesh Chaya? A living creature. Are cows and aardvarks, are they called Nefesh Chaya in the Torah? Yes or no? What? Who said no? No, you're wrong, actually. They are. They're all called Nefesh Chaya. The cow and the aardvark, not specifically, but all animals are called Nefesh Chaya. In fact, the Pasuk then says about man, Vayehi ha'adam le'nefesh chaya. Right? So what distinguishes us?
If you look in the Targum Unculus translates it, when it comes to man, he translates it as the Ruach Spirit Mimalalo. You know what the word Mimalalo is? You know what the word, you know, like, it's Hanukkah coming. You know that song? How come you guys don't know that song?
That was a Hanukkah song. They changed the pasuk, right? Okay. Memalelo means to speak. Vayehi ha'adam l'nefesh memalelo.
But of course, memalelo is not simple sound. What is it?
Listen. Memalelo.
It's alliteration. It's double alliteration. Hallel.
Right? So,
that which begins in wonder, which is poetry, is the perfect language for that which should begin in wonder, religion. Otherwise, if, gentlemen, if you don't have wonder about the nature of the world, okay, and that's your part of who you are as an Orthodox Jew, then you are a member of what I call the Orthodox Jew Club. Right? There is spirit. Nishmat Chayim. And that's religion.
So that's the language. That's poetry. So it says it would be worthwhile, it would be worthwhile to begin to know what you're saying. And it would begin to be worthwhile, even if you have to skip, right? In Sukkah de Zimra, and you say only one chapter. You learn what it says, and then you think about it, and you feel about it, and you try and say, what speaks to me in my life? And you do that for a week or a month. And then, when you get it, then you try something else. I've said this many times. We'll talk about Shmoneh Esrei also. We won't have time to talk about that today. But I've said this many times to people, and I say, but I have to say the whole thing. I say, what are you, crazy? Right now, you're not saying anything. You don't know what the words mean, and you're skipping through it or sleeping through it, or you're, while you're supposedly saying it, you're on the beach in Bali or at some football match or something like that, which Americans call a football game, okay? Different sport. So do it! Right? I mean, I've been in this business of teaching for a long, long time. And I can't tell you how many, but it's a huge number of people who say, who have said to me, Rabbi, it just doesn't speak to me. So I at times I've begun speaking to them in Swedish. Now, I don't know Swedish, but they don't know that I don't know Swedish. And I've talked to them just mumble,
See, Rabbi, what are you saying? I say, well, you know, you don't understand. So of course you don't understand because you don't understand Swedish. It's why you're talking Swedish. So I say, well, you think that you can have a claim against davening because you say it, it doesn't mean anything, but it's Swedish. So at least translate into English, right? Now, all translations, Robert Frost, you've heard of Americans, you've heard of Robert Frost? Did you have to read a poem, Americans, did you have to read a poem by Robert Frost in high school? You did. Okay, of course you did, right? I mean, nobody's excited about it is, you know, part of the failure of American school, right? I don't take it as your failure. It's a failure of your school. Okay?
Robert Frost. Anyway, Robert Frost said that the only thing lost in the translation of poetry is the poetry, right? So that's why it's kedai to know it in Hebrew, but still, it's second best, okay? Now,
but you don't have any, I see, don't take this as a, I'm trying to, it's a diagnosis, right? Like you go to a doctor, I'm a doctor.
Okay, I got a doctor and he tells you, well, this is wrong with you. So you say, oh, you, that makes me feel bad, you say. You know, I thought you were a nice guy. He says, what are you talking about? I have to tell you the truth, right? So I'm telling you the truth. What I'm not hearing today is any sense that in your education, I mean, that in your education, somehow or other, you've been turned on to a poetic spirit, to a spirit of wonder about things, no matter what you're interested in. You don't have to be interested in anything. Whatever you're interested in, I presume you're interested in something, right? Are you interested in an Apple 9? I know it isn't. There is no Apple 9. Is that right? It's 8, right? Is that correct? Okay, but when you'll be interested in Apple 9, the world will be interested in Apple 9, right? Really, if you're excited about it, so you write a poem about it, right? So to be, doesn't matter, you're a physicist, you're a lawyer, right? You're a urologist, I don't care what you are. There is wonder in whatever a person does and whatever a person experiences. And if not, well, your mind, you're a zombie. So there are two things. I'm going to move to towards the end. The end is not the... I have a long list of things here, but don't worry. There are two things. I'll finish with two things about if you're not in prayer, it's not prayer. Okay? I'll explain what that means. What I mean by that. If it's got nothing to do with you, it's not prayer. The most heartfelt prayer I think I was ever informed of in the yeshiva was a guy who came to me. There's a baseball team called the Chicago White Sox. The White Sox were in the playoffs. Did they win the World Series ever in the last 10 years or so? About 10 years ago. Anyway, this guy, he says, Rabbi, he says, the White Sox are playing, and I'm a Chicago White Sox fan. I said, what? You're Chicago and you're Jewish and you're a White Sox fan? He said, yes, Rabbi. I said, okay, don't take it as a criticism. He said, would it be permissible? He asked me a halakha question. Would it be permissible for me to daven? They're in this big game in the playoffs. Would it be permissible for me to daven that they win? So,
standing right here. Okay. Standing right here. This is where it is. I'm not taking it. Standing right here. Standing up. And I put my hand on his shoulder. I said, not only was it mutar, not only is it permissible, but that's going to be the most meaningful tefillah you've ever said in your life. The next day, he comes back to me, beaming. He said, you were right, Rabbi. I said, you mean the White Sox won? He said, yes, they won. But I said the prayer before they won. And it was the most meaningful prayer I ever said in my life. Right? Right? You've got to be there. It's got to be about you. You have to be. If the Jew isn't in the sitter, it's not prayer. I told the following story once in Modi'in. Kalbach was sort of sleeping next to me on a bench. I was the warm-up act. You know, in rock concerts, there are warm-up acts. I was the warm-up act for Shlomo. So he asked me this. I told this story that in a small shtetl near Warsaw, there was a certain Jew named Moshe Borachovitz. Okay, and he was hiding in a bunker. All the Jews had been killed. He thought that all the Jews in the shtetl had been killed, and he had paper and ink, a pen,
and he began to write a sitter. Why did he begin to write the sitter? Because he said, how can the world exist if there's no sitter? But it's a strange sitter, because it reads like this. And now I'm not quoting, but this is the way it reads. Baruch Shomar, Chaim ben Yaakov, V'hayoha Olam, Gittel Bas. And through in the words, there are Jews scattered in the words of the sitter. And I said, why did he do that? Because you can't have a sitter if there are no Jews. If there are no Jews, if you're not in the sitter, it's not davening. It's an amazing story, so amazing that when I finished, Kalbach leaned over to me and said, is it true? So I said, Shlomo, I'm not like you. I only tell true stories. It's true. The sitter is in Kibbutz Lochamei HaGeta'ot, up in the north of Israel. They've got this museum, Holocaust Museum, and the sitter is there. I told this story at Nishmat once, and it was a special lecture. I told it, and one of the women came over to me. She says he was my cousin, Moshe Morochovitz. He survived the war. So the sitter exists. So the question is whether we are in the Sidurim. But I leave you with the last thing. If you say, listen, it's too hard for me. You know, this Hebrew, I have to work through it, and you know, and like that. And the translations are just translation. I mean, like I said, the King James is a wonderful translation. Luther, that lousy anti-Semite of major proportions, Luther translated the Bible into German. It's a magnificent translation, but it's not right in everything, right? So that's why Hebrew is the... But nonetheless, you guys all can read English, right? So take a poem, or I can suggest the poem, and read the poem, and try to get into the idea of poetry. Then you can switch that to so I'm just going to read a poem. You have it in front of you, okay? And it's a poem about wonder. It's not a Jewish poem, okay? On His Blindness is by John Milton. It's the other side, okay? We're not going to get to On His Blindness today. Rav Lichtenstein always used to talk about On His Blindness. Wonderful poem, but this is a poem called The Silence of the Stars. It's about American poet David Wagoner. And I just give you a couple references so you get it. There's a guy named Lawrence Vanderpost. He's a South African, an interesting guy. He's the guy, you guys that read news, you know about Prince Charles, you know, from the royal family of England. Prince Charles, you know, they published a letter, they found a letter that he wrote to Lawrence Vanderpost, in which he says that the problem of the Middle East is not just the Jews, the foreign Jews. Got it? You know, it's not just Jews, foreign Jews who came, you know? There were never any problems, but they're the foreign Jews. You know. So, but everybody says, well, some of his best friends are Jews, right? Okay? So Lawrence Vanderpost, one of the things he did was he tried to save the pristine nature of the Kalahari Desert. Anybody know where the Kalahari Desert is?
Africa.
Good. You knew it? Very good guess.
I knew it. I just didn't know where Africa was.
Okay, Kalahari Desert. In the Kalahari Desert, the only people who live there are these small little guys, you know, they call the Bushmen, right? A vast expanse of desert. And they were going to try to do things with it to de-desert it in one way or another. And Lawrence Vanderpost ran a campaign and it was made into a preserve, the Kalahari Desert. It's a place I would say I would like to spend a week in the desert because I know I never meet anybody there that I know, you know? So Lawrence Vanderpost spent a lot of time in the desert and spent a lot of time with the Bushmen, and he wrote in a somewhat something of an autobiography. He wrote something that led to a story that led Wagoner to write this poem, Imagining, The Silence of the Stars. Now, Do we ever talk about the stars saying anything as Jews? You don't get up early enough on Shabbos to say all the Sukkot is in them, right? Hashamayim misafrim kvod el umase yadov magida rakia yom li yom yabia omer v'layla v'layla yachaveda ein omer v'ein zavim v'li nishma tola, right? I'm not going to translate it because it wouldn't, but it's quote, the silence of the stars. When Lawrence Vanderpost one night in the Kalahari Desert told the Bushmen he couldn't hear the stars singing, they didn't believe him. They looked at him, half smiling. They examined his face to see whether he was joking or deceiving them. Then two of those small men who plant nothing, who have almost nothing to hunt, who live on almost nothing and with no one but themselves, led him away from the crackling thorn scrub fire and stood with him under the night sky and listened. One of them whispered, "Do you not hear them now?" And Vanderpost listened, not wanting to disbelieve, but had to answer, "No." They walked him slowly, like a sick man, to the small, dim circle of firelight and told him they were terribly sorry. And he felt even sorrier for himself and blamed his ancestors for their strange loss of hearing, which was his loss now. On some clear night, when nearby houses have turned off their visions, when the traffic dwindles, when through streets are between sirens and the jets overhead are between crossings, when the wind is hanging fire in the fir trees and the long-eared owl in the neighboring groves between calls is regarding its own darkness, I look at the stars again as I first did to school myself in the names of constellations and remember my first sense of their terrible distance. I can still hear what I thought at the edge of silence were the inside jokes of my heartbeat, my arterial traffic, the sea above high sea of my inner ear, myself tunelessly humming. But now I know what they are. My fair share of the music of the spheres and clusters of ripening stars, of the songs from the throats of the old gods, still tending even tone-deaf creatures through their exiles in the desert. And we get up every Shabbos and we say the same thing. But as far as we are concerned, we have no idea of what we're saying. And maybe, if you were all moved by this poem, which to me proves you might have a soul, okay? And if not, keep reading it aloud. Say, if I could find that in davening, maybe I would daven. So, as you know, I'm on a Shabbaton, a sabbatical. So, but it's worth it to come out of whatever I'm doing just to read this poem and to suggest that it might be in this world in which the poet talks about, on some clear night when nearby houses have turned off their visions. What visions are they turning off in the nearby houses? This poem was written around 1960. What visions are they turning off? What are we spending our time looking at all the time? Then, 1960, televisions. That's what visions. Men have visions. Who has visions? Prophets. Right? Poets, prophets. They have visions, right? What have our visions become? Right? And now, those are visions? Right? Yeah, but it's so good. Right? So good. Right? You guys, how many of you have succeeded? How many, as soon as I'm done, are going to look at this? Those are the visions. But maybe there's a vision beyond this. Right? Maybe it could die worthwhile to listen to the owl, to hear the wind hanging fire in the fir trees. Okay, somebody's supposed to come. Oh.